Hi everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 212. Today we're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 5, Episode 22, The Gift, and Angel, Season 2, Episode 22, There's No Place Like Plurtzglurp. As usual, if you would like to get into contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter at re_watchable. This post on hypeable.com or rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. My name is Karen, and today I'm joined by fellow superfan Mai and newbies Danielle and Mitch. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm going to kick off fun facts, and I don't think I'm going to be stealing Danielle's fun fact because I have a feeling I know what her fun fact is. But
you tell me, that'd be great, because I don't know.
I think I know it too. So it'd be funny if we were all wrong.
Well, Danielle, it's potentially what we did last night.
Okay. You go. Just go.
Okay. Danielle and I are in the same house. We're hanging out this weekend in Chicago, which is another reason why she is here. Of course, we always like having Danielle here, but I was like, well, I'm going to be with her. We might as well bring her in on the recording for the finale. Hmm. And it worked out pretty perfectly. Don't you want to talk about the movie we watched last night?
Yeah, it finally sank in what you were referring to.
Did you watch Guardians last night?
We did not. So my fun fact is that I am a huge, huge fan of the movie The Room. Not Room with like the mother and child stuck in a room, but The Room.
Yeah.
Which is the Citizen Kane of bad movies. Mm. And I try to make sure that like everyone around me has seen it. And so I introduced Karen to it last night and we watched it in my basement. And it was a lot of like us watching it and then me just like talking about it for about an hour nonstop.
Oh, so you guys are over at your house, Danielle. I thought you guys were at Karen's and Kristen's.
No. Karen came here this time. So we are in the Chicagoland area.
People who liked this also liked Troll 3.
Should I even ask?
I have Did never seen Troll 3.
Yeah. And Birdemic.
Yeah.
Wow.
I thought that was just a Mayism. I didn't know you were actually reading that.
I know, I thought it was off the top of your head. Legit. It's an amazing movie because it's so ridiculous and like plot points get dropped and all these things. But the reason why I really, really want people to watch it now is because James Franco, Dave Franco, Seth Rogen, all them made a movie based on the book that talks about the making of The Room.
Wow.
And it had recently premiered at South by Southwest, so this was the first time like anybody had seen it. And not only did it get like a standing ovation, people were also saying that it was James Franco's best work ever. Like hands down, like this is his greatest thing. So
is this where the Mark gif is from?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, hi Mark.
Yeah, see, I know that one.
I'm watching this though. This looks like my kind of digs. Just like wonderfully bad movies.
It's so terrible.
Karen, did you like it?
It's fascinating though. Like the whole story behind it is what makes it so interesting.
Yeah. I've heard so many things about it, so I think it's about time to jump on that bandwagon.
Please do. And if you end up watching it, I will give you the lowdown on history stuff. Just anybody, if anybody watches it, like come to me and I'll be like, oh my God, okay, so here's what you should know.
Fabulous. I can't wait.
Yeah. Mai, what's your fun fact?
Hockey always. Yeah. Norway beat France in the Worlds and Caps are still hanging in there in the playoffs, so I'm all hockey all the time.
Okay. Nice. What about you, Mitch?
Last night I went to a really fun party for a going away party. It was one of my best friends was in town, and her friend from Disney was going to Paris to go play Princess Aurora there. And I'm so excited for her, and I wish I was her, because she's living my dream life. So I'm just going to put that out there in the universe that I want to be a princess in Paris. Please make that happen, someone.
Noted.
All right. So let's jump into this week's episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is 522, The Gift. In this episode, Buffy dies and the world is saved through several convenient I can never say this word, Deus, right? Deus Ex Machina Revelations. 100 episodes have been leading up to this. Dead Buffy, Killer Giles, Engaged Xander, Terrifying Willow, and Cuddly Spike. Joss Whedon is very proud of himself, and he would like you to know it. So, the cool thing about this episode, other than the fact that it's the season 5 finale, is that this is the 100th episode of Buffy. And apparently it was originally billed as the series finale because this was the last episode to air on the WB. So I wanted to ask you guys what you thought of this, kind of not necessarily going through the plot points yet, but as a whole, what did you guys think of this as a season finale? Did you think that it kind of lived up to the expectations, or were you a little disappointed?
I definitely didn't see it coming, I'll give you that much.
I am going to be hated. From all of the things that I had heard about The Gift, I think I had a different expectation for it, and it kind of fell flat of that for me, unfortunately. I mean, there were great parts in it, but it wasn't, to me, it wasn't like worth the buildup that sort of we've been going through all season, and that we've been getting like, oh, just wait until the finale, just wait until the finale. And I was like, okay, I'm waiting till the finale. And I don't know.
Mai, where does this one sort of stack for you in terms of finales?
I'm giving it a thought. I think I like it more than the actual series finale. Actually.
Okay.
That's so fascinating. Okay.
Yeah.
This one's pretty high for me too. I think it's because there was so much foreshadowing, and looking back, it's so interesting to know that like so much has led up to this. And I think, I don't know if necessarily you get that on the first watch, because if you go back and look, Mai made these amazing charts for us to kind of help us through everything that was going on, the parallels and the foreshadowing and all of that. And we've got, like, back in season 3, the season 3 finale, we have the dream between Buffy and Faith, and Faith's comment is, miles to go, Little Miss Muffet counting down from 730. 730 means 2 years, 365 days times 2 years. It's 2 years from season 3 finale to this finale, which is what they were counting down to, Buffy's death and the whole thing with Dawn.
That was that?
That was that.
Wow.
So at the end of season 3... he knew what he wanted to do. He knew where this was going to go. And it
miles
took him
to go.
2 seasons. Yeah, it took him 2 seasons.
Miles to go before I sleep.
You know, it's funny now, hearing 730, that almost feels like an episode number. But no, we only go up to 22, so never mind. Because that would have been the series finale if they went up to 30. Some shows do every once in a while. So, So is that it? Are we all done with Little Miss Muffet, Tuffet stuff? Is that the rhyme and now we're out?
I mean, you're going to have to find out. You're just going to have to wait. The other thing with 730 is at one point, I forget which episode this is in. Hold on, it might be... I have like so many tabs and windows open. The number crops up again in season 4's finale, Restless, where Buffy sees a clock saying 7:30 and Tara tells her the clock is wrong. It is. There are no longer 730 days before Buffy's death. There are 365.
But the clock can't show that number.
Right.
Why not?
Right.
You can find a way to do it, I'm sure. Right?
65? It's like 7:30 is an actual time. Like, I can wake up at 7:30 in the morning, but I can't wake up at 3:65 in the morning.
Oh.
Not that I would want to wake up at like 3:65 in the morning because that's miserable, but I think, is that the reason why?
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
And so you get, like, not only does it start in the season 3 finale, but 4:15, this year's girl, you get a dream sequence. Buffy and Faith are putting sheets on the bed. Mm-hmm. And Faith says, there's so much to do before little sis gets here. You jump ahead to 422, Restless. And you have the whole, like, be back before dawn thing. 502, Real Me. You get the crazy guy outside the magic box. Calls her Curds and Whey, which is a reference to Little Miss Muffet. And then finally, like in 522, the gift, the ritual takes place at dawn. We see the sunrise. And it's just, I think that's why superfans like this finale. And I don't think everybody does, but the lead up to it is really fascinating. And the fact that he planted the seeds 2 seasons beforehand is incredible.
It's very cocky, as Natalie Alton says.
Yeah.
Very, like, whoa. Who plans 2 seasons ahead like that? That's crazy.
Joss Whedon is very proud of himself, and he would like you to know it.
Yes. Yes, he is. Well, I guess good payoff. Once again, I didn't expect it, but she's not dead. I'm not stupid. Even if this was billed as the series finale, I still wouldn't have thought she was dead. It wasn't convincing enough. Like,
it wasn't on billed as the finale. It was written as the finale as well. Hmm.
So it was like a Veronica Mars sort of thing where they found out that they were moving networks and didn't necessarily like wrote for the end, but then like moved networks and then market for the end.
CW, is it confirmed? Yes. This one is UPN. Is it confirmed? Yes.
Had been the series finale and if Buffy had died in this way, would that have been a satisfying ending for you guys?
No. Definitely not. There was no emotional resonance to the death. They didn't show enough reaction. That's why I feel like it's so unconvincing. And I feel like that's why I didn't even want to cry. Because I was just... It reminded me somewhat of the way that Harry reacts to Sirius's death in the movie. Because it's just silent, and I wish that I heard it. I wanted to hear Spike, like, blubbering. And that would have gotten me a bit farther. And if they had really killed Buffy here, it would have spent more time there, and that would have been fabulous, because I would have cried, and I would have been really happy that I was shocked and emotional at something. But I'm having major issues, because I can't seem to find a magic show that keeps death, including now Harry Potter, so I'm frustrated, and I want recommendations, people. Show me a magic show that has death being death, because I need it. I really do.
Kill people for Mitch, please.
Yes, please.
Dear God, do it. I agree with your emotional resonance. The showing, I guess, of the aftermath, because that seemed a little rushed. Like, we did get the clips of the immediate aftermath where Spike is on the ground, mm-hmm. which I think that was probably the hardest hitting for me.
Yeah.
The one thing, I guess if I can go into it, like, slightly, the thing I think that kept me from where I think the show wanted me to be is the fact that the end kind of felt slightly cobbled together. Yes. I understand. And I saw the notions that like Buffy and Dawn are one, that they have the same blood. Like they hit you over the head with that at the end, which I actually appreciated because I didn't remember that part from the beginning,
mm-hmm, me too.
But I think it got a little bit confusing and a little bit, like that they were trying to like stick things together and maybe they didn't fit together all the way when they had Buffy die instead of Dawn, because that would stop the blood flowing, but like the blood was never flowing, but like,
yeah,
it felt very much like they were trying to get somewhere and then ran out of steam by the end and just tried to like paste things together really quickly to make it work.
I mean, they kind of wrote themselves into a hole with the blood stops flowing. Because they can't say, until a summer's child dies. Because that's what technically that meant, I guess. Because the blood was still flowing. Dom was still, I guess, cut and alive. And that's the thing. So, yeah, I'm with you. That's where it feels cobbled together. That they just kind of... They couldn't give away too much by that original Slayer vision that Buffy had with Death is Your Gift. And they also couldn't give away too much with this whole open up the portal with the blood stops flowing, so will the hell portal, you know, so. And then we have all these, like, pterodactyls roaming around. Like, is that a thing, or do they just stop caring immediately? Because they're like, Buffy's dead, whatevs. I don't know.
It's a hell dimension. It's opening up portals to hell dimensions. There are dragons and demons, and they come in all sorts of shapes and sizes.
So that's a thing. Like, I didn't just imagine that. Like, there's literally like a dragon sitting on top of
Yeah.
like Sunnydale College right now, right?
Which
It
could be
definitely
interesting.
came through. Yeah.
Do we just want to talk about the blood thing straight away, or?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because, and I'm going to quote it, the blood flows, the gates will open, the gates will close when it flows no more. So this has to be Giles guessing, or it's a metaphor, because this is the first time the key is a human and
Right.
capable of bleeding. So it's probably referring to her life force as energy, since Spike specifically points out that blood is life.
Yeah, but then we fall into a whole other hole of Buffy's
Yeah,
not the
and then
key.
Buffy says, she is me, they made her out of me, and does that whole thing.
So Buffy is, quote, the key as well.
No, that Dawn's blood lets the portal know which life force slash energy is needed to close the portal to bring the walls back up.
So Buffy is like diet key.
Yeah, duplicate or substitute closing key, but she
Closing key,
can't
but she can't
open
open
it.
it because she doesn't have the
Yeah.
actual
Mystical
magic,
key
whatever.
energy
She
that
doesn't
sets things in
glow or
motion.
she doesn't have that energy in her. Okay, I get
Yeah.
that. So we're talking DNA wise. I'm starting to follow it a little
It's
bit more.
basically a life for a life.
Yes, okay.
But if the key hadn't been made human, they would have had to wait until the energy had used itself up on its own, and,
Yeah.
who knows how long that would have taken.
Yeah, I guess they could have just healed Dawn up if they were, I'm saying they like Lori, could have just healed Dawn up and just kept her prisoner for a long time to keep the blood flowing. I mean, does she have to die in order for this to, or does she have to have continuous cuts in order to have this continue on, or is it just
It
keep her
wasn't about the
alive,
blood,
or?
Mitch.
Well, I guess I'm confused there because I'm also thinking of Spike saying blood is everything, and then, I don't know, the blood flowing being opening up of the portal. See, this is where I feel like this should have been explained like in the show. I shouldn't have to try and jump around so far for this because it seemed like the show wanted to make it such an obvious solution that I should have gotten from the get-go, and I don't, and I wish I did.
Basically, the Dawn's blood opened the portal, which allowed Glory to go back home. She didn't care about what happened after that, and if Dawn had kept bleeding, the walls would have stayed open and hell on earth, basically. So, as the replacement closing key, because of what Mai described, Buffy was able to close the portal before anything major really happened. So, it's. I think it's interesting because they don't explain it explicitly, which, I mean, maybe people would have complained if they have because that's a little bit too heavy-handed. But at the same time, I kind of like the interpretations of the whole situation.
And that's another thing. Like, we have like 1/8 hell on Earth, which maybe it's a plot point in the future. I don't know. But I feel like that's more significant than it was given because of the fact that we just see this calm scene of the grave. And I know that we kind of needed that. But it seems out of context because we were talking about like somewhat of an apocalypse. In the middle of all that, you have time to bury and/or make a gravestone. That felt a little bit just calmer. Maybe I'm missing some of the parts because I haven't seen that. I haven't seen up to that yet, I should say, properly. They did do a little jump ahead. I'm curious to see how the world is because it feels like it shouldn't, even like Los Angeles, like Angel's not going to be having a good time either because he's pretty close to Sunnydale, so pretty sure that dragon's going to come pay him a visit too.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we'll have to wait until next season for both shows to see how this impacts it. What I want to talk to you guys about, too, is Buffy's attitude in this episode because we learn the whole thing about Dawn and how Giles interprets what he's reading, that if they kill Dawn, then they don't have to worry about the portal. And Buffy says she's not going to let Dawn die no matter what. Even if the entire world is taken over by the Hell Dimension, Dawn stays alive. If Dawn dies, they all die, basically. Or, you know, if the portal is opened, like, sorry, but they're all going down. How did you guys feel about that?
I think it makes a lot of sense after, like, her mother's death and, like, the things that have happened this season. I think that was particularly well-founded. The fact that she's just kind of done. Like, she said even, like, she was going to retire. Like, she was done. So I think that made a lot of sense. And I think it was warranted to a point. I think she's just been rattled so much that you can only take so much until you kind of start to give a little bit. And this is Buffy giving.
I'm cool with it because Buffy deserves this at this point. The show and the character. I often say that because sometimes they're different entities. It feels really, really separate. And right now I definitely feel that because I feel like the show needed a protagonist that was willing to do something extreme to move it into a new territory, especially from the fact that this glory idea is supposed to be such a big thing, and because of this vision of death is your gift. They had to play that up, and they had to make that a big deal here. And also, I do think that Buffy herself, yeah, you're right, Danielle, she deserves to, I suppose, give a little, because she's taken so much misery, and she wants to give good in a way, so that she can stop the misery in any fashion that she's able to.
Can I jump in really quickly? You reminded me when you were talking about the death as your gift. I had a question about that, or I would like to discuss that if we can derail this slightly. So because it was always kind of unclear what that meant, I had a different interpretation of it. And I think that's also what made me not connect with the very end of the episode as much, because to me, the death is your gift seemed like Buffy has the ability to die without it being a super huge deal. Just because we had seen it in the very first season, like she died and she came back. So like the death is her gift. It was more to me like Buffy has like some relationship with death where it's going to be okay. Instead of like the gift that Buffy can give to the world is her extinguishing herself, which sounds kind of bad. So like when I was sitting there watching the end of it, I was like, okay, so when is she going to regenerate? When is she going to crawl back out of wherever she was? Or like, so I kept waiting for that until the very end of the episode, which obviously would have cheapened it, but that's, there was definitely confusion that came in there because that's what I thought was going to happen, because that's how I interpreted that.
You know, you bring up a good point, because this means we're going to have another Slayer now. And while the first time Buffy died, it was more legit because it was just CPR that revived her. Now it's going to be magic, and I assume. So that's going to make me a little bit testy. But if we get a fun new Slayer out of this, that'd be cool. Hopefully it's not something as throwaway as Kendra was, because that was sad. I liked her, and then the show didn't. So it just did away with her. It just at ease, and I was no about that. But then Faith came about after that, so that's kind of cool. So I wonder how that's going to go down.
Since Faith is still alive, though, would we get another Slayer? Because there's one still alive.
I don't know. Like, I like to try and compare this to Avatar as much as I can, which I know you don't know, Danielle. But this isn't the same, because it's not like we're reincarnating a spirit, it doesn't seem, anymore. It seems like we're just filling a role. So that's the difference in this reincarnation in this series, and that's where it gets really fuzzy, because it's like, I don't know if we're ever going to get another Slayer now, unless both Buffy and Faith have died at the same time. Is that what you're saying?
Well, just that Faith was the replacement for Buffy, but then Buffy came back. So, like, it said, like, I thought the prophecy was that there, like, is one Slayer. So, because there were, there happened to be two alive, like, it would keep spawning off of each one of their deaths. It would just kind of go back to being just one.
Yeah, the most recent one that has been born will be the one that will need to die in order for a new generation to start. So that's what happened with Buffy. It's just so weird that the Slayers never died up until Buffy. Maybe they had in like those, you know, little books that I keep hearing about, but it feels like very convenient that it's the first time.
I mean, they died every time. They just didn't die and come back.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Oh. Sorry, yeah, I didn't finish my thought there, but yeah, you got it. because I feel like that has to have happened before. I feel like Giles could read up on a little book on this and see what's going on. He probably is all researched into this right now.
I will say you will learn more about that sort of thing coming up. I don't know exactly when they really begin discussing it. It might not be for a little while longer, but yeah, you will get some more information on that. So keep an eye out.
About the Slayer line or about the death of your gift?
The Slayer, the whole like regenerating thing. The death is your gift thing, I definitely see it, and maybe this is narrow-minded, I see it as Buffy, her gift to the world is to die in order to close this portal and in order to end the apocalypse just like before. But I like that there are multiple interpretations, and I don't necessarily think any of them are wrong, because on the one hand, death is her gift. She does bring death to a lot of demons and that sort of thing, and that in and of itself is a gift because she's saving humans. And Danielle, your interpretation is obviously true, because she does kind of have an interesting relationship with death and resurrection and how all of that works. So the idea that you can kind of look at it from all these different angles is very interesting. I almost said all these different angels, which would have also been appropriate.
Listen, the show Angel and actually Buffy are the reasons that I'm able to spell the difference between angel and angle. So.
Perfect. All right, so yeah, there are some plot holes and there are some difficulties in this episode, and I think looking back on it now, I don't know. I guess I just kind of skim over some of them. Ariana, I think, wrote this doc, and she said, apparently Glory only has one magical night to perform the ritual, so why wasn't that ever brought up before? And it's,
she has to wait until the right time and do it at a certain place, but it's not specified that the time won't come again.
Yeah, and I think because
when Giles kills Ben, you know, spoiler, he says sooner or later Glory will reemerge and make Buffy pay for that mercy and the world with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think part of the reason why it feels like this episode is all jumbled is because everything kind of comes to a head right at the very end. And so it's throwing all of this information at you to get you where you need to go. And it just isn't quite as smooth as maybe some of the other finales that we've experienced.
Should have been 2 hours.
Yeah.
Probably.
I would have that would have been good with me. I am looking forward to rewatching that, because you're saying that it has replay value.
Oh, yeah.
But I think if they had been given more space to do the things that they wanted to do, it would have been better.
Yeah. What they did do very well, though, is pick out individual characters and kind of give them their little moment to shine. So I want to go through some of those right now. First, we've got Anya, who proves to be extremely useful. She's the one that comes up with their plan in the end, basically. And I love this scene. It's actually my favorite scene, because she's like, come on, guys, we need solutions. Like, why is nobody coming up with something good enough? And I don't know if it's Buffy or somebody tells her, like, you know, fine, you come up with something. She's like, okay, what about this? And what about that? And they end up using all of that in the end. And it really kicks Glory down. I mean, she does a great job of remembering all these things and coming up with this plan. And it's a great moment for Anya, who I think sometimes is used mostly as comic relief. Very well, mind you, but did a great job here.
Here to help. Want to live.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was. I really liked her. I like her in general a lot, but she was the best part of this episode for me. And when I think it was Giles who had confronted her and been like, will you come up with something? If anybody, slight related thing, but like if anybody is a fan of The Flash on here, she really reminded me of the HR character who just kind of like pretends to give out ideas, sometimes does ideas, but really just tries to facilitate other people coming up with ideas. So I really liked the fact that they took it from that and actually had her make up practical lands, and then that's what they go with. So I liked that slight veer that happened there, because I thought it was just going to be like, okay, she's just kind of here, but she doesn't have a lot of value, just the value to facilitate. And that wasn't the case.
It was nice continuity too, to see Olaf's troll hammer come back. I really appreciated that. And it felt like a bit like Thor. So that was kind of fun.
It totally felt like Thor.
Yeah. I was like, she just climbed up this tower, hitting Loki with a big old hammer. I'm like, yeah.
And on the flip side of that, what did you guys think about Xander proposing?
Well, he's not dead, so that's cool, because I thought he was dead as soon as he proposed. I mean, that's dead man walking territory, right? Especially in finale business. God, I was like, he's really, really, really dead now. But alas, he survived, and that's very shocking for someone who proposed in a series finale, a.k.a. season finale for us, but for those watching at the time, series finale, they thought.
I thought it was interesting. Like, I actually had an opposite reaction to Anya, because Anya's reaction, when she did it, I was like, oh, she's completely right in this. Like, I was wrong. But, like, my reaction went the romantic route. Like, the world is ending. Like, yeah, you want to be with me. But when Anya's like, no, this means you just want no responsibilities, no strings. I was very impressed that it took my thought and took me down a notch.
I love Anya's development, and I love that she's able to have more complex thoughts like this now. She used to not be able to. She was very simple. She saw a black and white world and was very blunt about everything. But now she's like blunt in a more human way. I love seeing her become more and more human. I think she's one of the best transformations in the show. Willow as well. She's also very amazing. Everything she does in the show makes me so happy.
Yeah, let's talk about Willow for a minute, because she has a lot of pressure on her in this episode, and she's the one that needs to kind of figure out a way to bring Glory down a notch, and she does by transferring Tara's crazy back into Glory. And it's everything she's doing, even in the previous episode, the way that she was walking through Buffy's mind, she's relying more on her magic, becoming more confident. And I think, actually, this is something that that you were talking about in one of your docs, the parallels between becoming part one and part two in season two, and then the season five finale, in that Willow is Buffy's only hope, and she's very uncomfortable with the pressure, but she comes forward, she steps forward and performs powerful magic anyway. She does the soul curse on Angelus in season two, and here, obviously, Tara Sanity, she takes care of that. So she's the big gun, and there's a lot of pressure on her. And I think Willow, if you remember back in season one, she has trouble with that. She has trouble being the person that other people rely on, or being in the spotlight. I'm thinking in particular the being on stage.
Yeah, her dreams
and,
about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
yeah,
that
her
as well. But
and
even
Restless.
Right, right. And even going back to actual season one. But yeah, I mean, this is something that's very difficult for her, and yet she continually does step up to the plate and does a fantastic job. She really hurt Glory in this episode, and it was what they needed to slow her down.
It's usually a good Deus Ex, Willow. I'm really happy with it. I never really have too many complaints about things that she does. I just want her to give Spike a soul already, because whenever we talk about that again, I'm like, any day now.
And Danielle, I know that you don't always care too much about Willow, but you mentioned when we were watching this that you were kind of impressed with her.
I was. I dislike the stuttering, but I like this Willow who takes charge. I don't like the fact that, like, she has to be stressed and scared and whatever else to kind of be this version of herself. But there's something about her being able to, yes, be afraid, but also know what to do and what she has to do. And something that has been sticking out to me that I've been actually slightly surprised about was in the last episode, the penultimate of the series or of the season, when she's walking through Buffy's mind, And Xander tells Giles that this was what she was planning on doing. And Giles makes a remark about how he looks almost slightly worried, slightly proud, but slightly worried. And he says, like, how it's really advanced magic. And, like, his reaction to it, I don't think that would happen for a Willow who was, like, stuttering all the time, or, like, a Willow that we've seen previously. So I like where she is now. And I would like to keep seeing that decisiveness. She can stutter if she wants to, but, like, the decisiveness and the just personal strength coming out more. I enjoy that.
And how about, like, all of her Jedi mind tricks she's getting into? It's really fun. She's just, like, talking to, like, Spike through her little intercom in her head. That was so cool. I was like, oh, let's do more of that.
And speaking of Giles as well, Giles has an interesting little arc in this episode. He's the one that puts the idea out there that perhaps they have to kill Dawn. And he stresses that he loves Dawn and he doesn't want to do this, but if it's between her and the entire world, for him, it's not that difficult of a decision to make, which I think is fair. And obviously he's a little more removed from the situation than Buffy is. But he's also, we get Tara calling him a killer, and later he obviously snuffs out Ben, and he's got this very, he kind of brings Ripper out a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this, see this coldness about him. So, I mean, we all love Ripper. I don't think that's anything that needs to be argued against, but still, I mean, seeing this side of Giles, seeing that he's capable of doing this, even with the right intentions, it's a little scary.
Did he kill Glory as well as Ben? He must have.
Yeah, because they're in the same body.
Wow. I wish they figured out that they could have killed Ben earlier and killed Glory. This whole season would have been solved a lot quicker.
Yeah, but they didn't know that they were the same.
Yeah.
Are you suggesting?
Yeah. Wait, Glory and Ben are the same person?
You guys are quick.
But I really enjoyed the Giles stuff as well, just because he has gone through quite a few transformations. Like, he isn't a watcher anymore, so he's had a lot of time to think about, like, who he is, what he can do, and, like, what it means for him to be outside of that title. And so it feels like he is finally able to put the books aside and make different kinds of decisions. And I think this is showing him making a different kind of decision that he's made than he's made in the past. And it's not, it was slightly scary, but it was more like seeing Giles grow and be able to take things and, like, do what he thinks needs to be done. Because yes, they do follow Buffy and usually it works out, but, like, sometimes it doesn't. And so it's kind of like he's not a safety net, but he's like the double tap, like the Zombieland double tap. Buffy's the first shot. He's the second shot. That's kind of how it feels like to me.
I knew I liked you, Danielle.
Yeah, because was Buffy just planning on letting, like, this evil god, like, walk around? She's like, don't ever come back. Wags finger. I'm like, she just opened up a hell dimension. I think you should probably kill her.
Well, again, there is an issue here because she killed those warriors that were very much human, the Byzantine warriors. But I think maybe that was something the show forgot about, or maybe because it was in defense of her family. Not that that makes it any different, but
this is like direct defense of her family again.
The knights were attacking her and Ben wasn't attacking her.
It's almost, right. Although kind of falls into like the cold blood stance, because it's like, oh, well, she's not killing just my family, she's killing the whole world, so I guess she gets a pass. She's not attacking just us right now.
Or did she give up at this point? Like, was she done because she thought everything was over? And, like, she said she was going to quit, she was going to retire after Dawn was safe and after everything was safe. So did she prematurely think that everything was over and then decided not to deal with Glory anymore?
Listen, if she's ready to quit, they need to get Faith out of jail, because someone needs to get up and move in here. Like, you can't just let the world fall at your feet, Buffy. That's what really frustrated me about this plot. I don't think it's realistic in any fashion for her to quit. I like that she thinks that. I do, because it's like showing an exhaustion that she should be feeling here. But I wish she would have come to terms with the fact that she can't just quit. And I wonder if she took, I guess, dying here as her form of quitting. She must have been in some fashion taking it as like her final rest and her way of getting out of it. But I mean, obviously, even as newbies, Daniel, I think we know that it's only going to be a matter of time until she'll be back. And I wonder how she'll be like, I was just sleeping. I was peaceful. And you woke me back up.
Sorry, I lost my train of thought there for a second.
A no comment is sufficient, Karen. Yes,
she was going to quit if Dawn died.
Okay.
Dawn's not dead yet at that point.
Right. Oh, I thought she was going to quit regardless.
She wanted to quit because she didn't think she was going to beat Glory. That was before. And then
that's the
now
bookshelving moment.
Yes, and now she said she was going to quit if Dawn died, because what's the point? And I mean, I don't agree with that, because she has a duty, and regardless of her family situation, like, this is something she can't really give up. Like, she's tried to shrug it off before, she's tried to be normal, and she can't, because the world just keeps coming at her, so... I mean, I don't really agree with that, and I don't think it's realistic, but I do understand where she's coming from in that instance.
Sorry, I don't mean to take over here, but I just got really excited because I read about the Buffy bot being back, and oh my god, how fabulous was that in this little Glory fight?
Did that trick you guys?
Yes!
Okay, when it first came on screen, I was like, oh, this is the Buffy bot, that's what it is. But her language seemed more complex than the one that we had seen previously. So that's where I was feeling a little bit of doubt, just because I didn't know when they would be able to program more like language cues and stuff like that. But I wasn't completely surprised when like the head came off and it was the Buffy bot.
Yeah.
Don't feel bad. Not even her friends can tell the difference.
Yeah, that's very true.
That is true. That is true.
I like when they bring back elements. I remember when we first started the show and everyone was like, Mitch, you don't even know the canon they're going to bring back. And that's one of my favorite things in any series, when they know their material. I guess they mostly do, because once again, you know, she killed the Knights of Byzantine, so that was just a thing. But here it's nice to see things like this come back, and I feel like we really just need to make more Buffy bots, or maybe just repair that one in the meantime while waiting for, like, you know, Buffy to resurrect or something.
Buffy,
do we want to talk about the things they brought back?
Go ahead.
Well,
give us a lesson.
Teach me.
The machine that controls the wrecking ball.
Is this what?
Xander got the promotion at his construction job. Oh. That was in 503.
Okay.
The replacement. Do you remember that episode?
I do. The coin flip episode.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
The Dagon's Fair was found in 05, No Place Like Home.
That's the little sphere that glows that the guard gave to Buffy, and she's like, hey, thanks.
Yeah, it must be paranormal because it's so shiny.
Yes.
In Triangle, 511, they get the troll hammer.
Yeah, that was probably my favorite callback here. That was really cool, if I didn't already make that apparent.
And in Intervention, the Buffy bot is introduced. Mm. And Tough Love, the brain sucking of Tara, which is reversed in The Gift.
Yeah, preach for having Tara back, because we needed that.
We did?
Yeah.
Not saying that I don't like Tara. It didn't. That came out wrong. It.
Very cold, Danielle.
I didn't know. We? I'm just. No.
Do you not like her?
Bitter clucking witch hen.
Yes.
So, no, I do like her. I didn't feel her absence as much as I thought I was going to. Okay. If that makes sense. Like, if it was one of the other characters, if it was Anya, her absence I definitely would have felt. Obviously if it was Willow, I would have felt her absence. But to me, Tara hasn't had like a ton of personality or a ton of things to do on her own because she's always been paired with Willow. So her absence, I kept forgetting about it, or it felt more normal to me.
Yeah, she hasn't been around for too much. So
Tara's been kept to the side by Willow for most of the time she's been on the show.
Yeah, worst.
She's mostly just served as like a device to show Willow's feelings, as far as I can see. Like, for instance, when they kissed during is it the body? Must be the body.
Yeah,
that moment felt like it was more Willow's moment than it was Tara's. I feel like the camera concentrated more on Willow too. It was more of her mourning brought out that strong emotion in her.
I mean, to be fair, she did know Joyce a lot better, and
yeah,
we've known Willow a lot longer than Tara, so the idea that they're focusing on her does make sense.
Oh, no, yeah, it's not at the fault of the show. I think it's natural, because I think she was a character introduced later on in the show, as was Anya, but then again, Anya just feels like she has more legs than Tara does. I don't know, maybe she's been around for a little bit longer, but like, for instance, like her bunny thing comes back. That's cute, and like, once again, she's productive here. She comes up with these ideas, and I guess Tara didn't have that opportunity, seeing as her
Anya's
brain was
been sucked. Around since season 3, though.
Yeah, so she's had more time to get into it, so I hope Tara starts to feel that way. I've been waiting for it, because it's tough when you introduce a new Scooby. Like, Oz felt more important and he felt important quicker, honestly, than Tara ever did. So that's weird. It's weird that I think that. I don't want to think that. I want to love you, Tara.
Yeah, well, we'll see. They weren't kept away from the main Scooby gang. Mm-hmm. Because Willow wanted something for herself.
Yeah, that is true. So it took even longer after the character was introduced to get her into the Scoobies.
I want to talk about Spike now, too, because we get, he's re-invited into the house, and yeah, that was, oh man, he just basked in that. He took so long to step over that threshold. He was just living it. And he confesses again his love to her, but again says, like, I know that you don't love me back. He just really appreciates the way that she makes him feel like a man rather than a demon. And he's there to fight alongside her. He's there to protect Dawn until the very end. He will do whatever it takes in order to do that. And he, you know, we constantly have to remind ourselves, he doesn't have a soul. He has that chip in his head, but he doesn't have a soul. And yet he is willing to do all of this.
I was just going to bring that up because I thought it was really interesting how we were reminded of that again. Or like reminded / confirmed again by the Slither Lizard guy.
Yeah.
Because like he didn't have to say that. He could have just been like, you're a vampire. Why are you doing this? But he went the, sense any sort
smell
of around you. Yeah, exactly. So I thought that word choice there was really important and really interesting, because we do see all of these things that Spike is doing. And when he entered that house, which is my favorite scene, that whole thing between them, it was like it didn't seem like he was reveling like he normally did. It seemed more of like a, like his compassion. Yeah, the softness. And not like the, what is that word that Natalie uses a lot? Like the floppy softness? Is that the word? it was a different kind of softness. And that whole thing with them was just very different. And then I was also like, but Spike can be creepy. But then my brain was like, no, just let this slide. They're good now.
What is it about?
Back on the ship.
Is it the actor, Gene Marsters? He's so charismatic that we fall in love with Spike. Done. Like, I don't even think about how he was evil and all the horrible stuff he's done anymore. I'm just like, cool.
I think part of it is that Spike is so genuine. Like, yes, he's creepy and he has an obsession and it can be problematic, but you also...
He's honest about it?
Yeah, you don't really doubt him. Like, he cares for Buffy and he doesn't have to. He doesn't have a soul to make him feel guilty. This is like the purest form of caring about somebody, because he could just as easily kill them all. I mean, not with the chip in his head, but that is his sort of neutral stance. He is fighting against his very nature because of how he feels about Buffy. And sometimes you remember that, and sometimes you're like, well, okay, yeah, he is a little creepy, stole underwear out of her drawer and that kind of thing. But again, like, his reaction to the way that he loves people is all in, and it can be troublesome, but it's also very pure.
I can only imagine, especially with the doc bringing up the "you don't have a soul" thing, that Willow's checklist probably goes as follows: A, remove Chip from Spike's head; B, give him a soul; C, transfigure Rat Amy; and probably D, resurrect Buffy. You know, it's probably up there too.
Mitch, you do know that the soul thing is a curse, right?
Well, yeah, that's fine. She's like, she's willing and ready, I feel, at this point.
It's meant to hurt the vampire.
Yeah, but like, they did it for Angel. Why not just do it for Spike? They have to.
And it tormented him for like hundreds of years.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's not just as simple as a, like, insert soul here. It's probably like, ouch, the agony.
I mean, one could argue he's already in agony.
Wanting a soul, I think he's in agony, yeah. So I can imagine how much worse it would be when he got it. I don't know, he could probably be a case like Darla. I don't know if he'd survive the ordeal. He'd probably try and take his life out of, you know, the misery of all that he's caused, I suppose. But we'll see. I mean, it just felt like it's only been a matter of time, and I'm still waiting for it. So I'm waiting for a lot of stuff to happen that I really hope happens before season 7 series finale.
So speaking of Buffy, though, she dead. Just in case you guys didn't catch that part, she's super dead.
I mean,
she went through the portal, landed on the pile of stuff, and she's gonzo. We see Buffy's tombstone, and it says she saved the world a lot. And Ariana is actually kind of mad about this. She goes, "Why is Buffy's tombstone so silly? A teenager is dead. Where's the gravitas? It's not cute." I absolutely love this. I think that this is like one of the biggest catchphrases for Buffy. This is something people quote a lot. It's the whole idea of Buffy in general. She saved the world a lot. And yes, it's kind of silly, but I don't think that was intentional. They're not like, haha, Buffy would love this. I don't think they could literally put into words everything that she was able to do. And it's kind of simplistic, but it's
not all it says either.
Right, yeah. I mean, it says what? Devoted friend, beloved daughter.
Sister.
And it's... But still, I mean, it's true. It's factually true. And even though maybe they could have been a little more floral with their language... It is what it is, and I don't know, I really loved it. But newbies, what did you think of it? Was that annoying to you, or did you like it?
Word choice is everything, and I think when we first saw that, I think I made like an audible laugh, partially because I was expecting her to like come through, because I was expecting her to, death is her gift, so she can regenerate. But I'm with Ariana here. It seemed really out of the tone, like because a lot is separated from the first part of it. Like, it's its own sentence, isn't it? It's like, she saved the world, period, a lot. Or like, it was on its own line, so it kind of looked like a separate idea. And that just seemed really off tone to me as well. Partially because it seemed in tone, because I thought they were going like the, hey, she's fine way. And maybe they were like faking that she had a tombstone or something. But in thinking about how it was supposed to be, word choice is everything. And I know that it's hard to sum up everything that she did, but I don't think that they did a great job on that word choice.
That was cool. I can imagine the conversation around it, like Giles being like, okay, we have beloved and everything. He's like, oh, we need something to finish this off. And then Anya just kind of charming in. here with her little, she saved the world a lot. And then they're just like, yeah, yeah. And they all just put that on there. And it's kind of a saccharine moment, but sweet in a good way. Not too nasty. I don't think it's as horrible as Adriana thinks it is, but I actually chose it as my favorite quote. So apparently I really liked it a lot more than her.
Yeah. So the last thing I wanted to finish up on was, and I didn't even know this, apparently it's virtually impossible to avoid spoilers for this episode, with one national UK newspaper running a Buffy dies article. Sky One even ran trailers showing Buffy's grave.
Thanks.
Yeah. So,
God, that's horrible.
I'd be so upset. I would have been so mad.
I know. That's like saying, like, Voldemort dies or Dumbledore dies. Like, that's just a thing, like, right there. You don't announce that kind of stuff. You, like, wait.
Dumbledore kills Hermione.
Oh, God. No, don't. Stop. Bad head cannon.
Okay,
let's hear that one.
No, I don't want to.
That was a thing?
No, that was a fake rumor around the last book. No,
Lord.
But he was dead. Oh, okay.
The sixth book.
Oh.
Okay, let's jump into favorite scenes now. I already mentioned mine. Mine was Anya coming up with a plan, but Mai, what's yours?
Willow and Tara holding hands and clearing the path for Spike.
Yeah.
Because it reminds me of when they moved the vending machine in Hush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was nice. You have to imagine that Tara and Willow would both be very exhausted at this point, so they would definitely need the help of the other.
Danielle, what about you?
Just the Buffy and Spike in Buffy's house. Everything from when he first entered and all that.
It reminded me of how simple it was, too, when they first invited Spike in, and like they're hanging out with Joyce, and they're like, we're in a band together. Like, it felt like the same kind of, like, whatever, the world's ending, we gotta do this. And my favorite, I guess, thing was when Xander didn't die, because I went on a whole tirade last episode about, like, I love him now, I shouldn't, but I do, kind of like Spike. And I was like, he's going to die now, I know it, I've known it for a while, I just feel it. And I was really convinced it was going to happen at that engagement, so it was a pleasant surprise that he didn't.
That's good. I'm glad he didn't die.
Yeah, it's about time something good happened in the basement.
True.
Going to favorite lines, I just realized mine comes from my favorite scene as well. So clearly I really liked this part. It's after Anya goes through all of the stuff and kind of comes up with a plan. And Xander just sits there and goes, man, you know, smart women are so hot or something like that. And Willow just turns to him and goes, you couldn't have figured that out in 10th grade?
No. No, I was not for that, Karen.
It was so funny.
I love the way they look at each other.
I like that they can joke about it now.
Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't taking it as a joke. I was taking it as, like, serious business.
Mitch. No. Stop shipping everything.
No, like, I don't want to ship it. I don't.
They're so not into each other. Like, they really care about each other, and there's a lot of history there, but I think they've both really moved on. And especially Willow. I think Willow is just, all she sees is Tara. And I mean, Xander, I mean, he obviously loves Anya if he's going to propose to her. But yeah, I thought it was just a funny joke. Mai, what was your favorite line?
Spike, when you say you love us all.
Shut up, Spike.
Xander go, shut up, Spike.
Angel has, like, the same exact moment, too, I just realized. I don't know if that's a parallel we're going to point out later, but, like,
huh. Yeah, kind of. And Danielle?
So, in the sort of cold open where Buffy is actually fighting a vampire for the first time in what she says is a long time, or at least one that doesn't know of her, she's joking and quipping with him, asking him if he's heard certain phrases. And she says, wow, never heard that one. Okay, how about, oh God, my leg. which I really enjoyed. And then obviously it's the guy that she beats down says pretty much exactly that. But I really liked her performance or her delivery of, oh God, my leg.
What a fun cinematic opening, too, with, like,
yeah,
the flashbacks of, like, the entire show, which I'd love to scroll through and just look at every single, like, frame, just for fun. And, yeah, like, to have this whole, like, like very like a sequenced thing of just like just fighting this one vampire for this random guy in an alleyway. It just felt very classic Buffy in a good way.
Did it feel misleading to you at all? Especially once we got to the end, real quick.
Like a dream.
Because when this first came on, I turned to Karen and I was like, what is this? What is going on? When they were going through the different clips from previous Buffy seasons, previous Buffy moments, because they had never done that before, ever. And I was like, is this a supernatural thing? Like, what are they doing? And then they went into this interesting cold open where it was like nothing having to do with what was going on. I was like, okay, this is going to be really new, really different. And I was expecting, I mean, I know that the end of the episode brings in a whole bunch of stuff from previous seasons, but the way in which it was shown in the beginning was kind of threw me off guard. And then it kind of built up something I thought was going to happen, or like a feeling I thought was going to get that didn't happen. So I'm just wondering if you had an idea about how that made you feel in the beginning, if at all.
To me, it just made me feel like, okay, main cast member is going to, quote, die in this episode. And I say quote because I pretty much knew that anyone who was going to die here wasn't going to stick as well. I mean, I kind of had that feeling from the way they were presenting it. It just didn't feel like it was permanent sticky yet, even from the beginning of the episode. And also, I really just was thinking of, like, wow, they've really improved, like, the film quality of the show since the beginning, and the actors all look so much better, because everyone just looks so gawky. And, like, even Giles and, like, the pilot, it was really funny seeing those scenes again. I liked it, and like I said, it kind of felt like a dream sequence to me, this fighting the vampire in the alleyway bit after that, because it felt like, I don't even know. Like I said, it was so on its own and so unimportant, but in a good way. So it didn't exactly throw me off. It kind of led me up to, I think, what was coming in a good way.
I loved it because it was a return to roots, you know, her battling a vampire, and also kind of laughable because we start off in season one and vampires are the big issues, and you know, it's what she worries about, and now she's fighting a god and this vampire is just an annoyance. It's just like I went out back, you know, like killed a vampire, saved a human, no big deal. And but the it sets up Buffy's mood too, because she says the one guy is just like, you're just a girl, and she's like, I keep telling him that. And I like that transition into what is going to come with the rest of the episode, and just the consequences of her jumping through the portal. And Mitch, you did tell us yours already.
Yeah, she saved the world a lot. Sorry, Ariana.
All right, let's jump into Angel episode 222 now. There's no place like Plurtslurp. In this episode, Wes and Gunn have fun storming the castle while Angel accidentally ends up fighting for Cordelia's love. In the end, Cordy gives up the crown to go back to her gumshoe roots, and the pancakes return to L.A. with Fred in tow, only to find a forlorn Willow sitting on their stoop. So this has a pretty direct continuation from the previous episode in that Lorne can apparently survive being decapitated. You have to mutilate his body before he actually dies. So did that trick anybody? Did you guys know that he wasn't actually dead?
Chortle. No, I knew he was not dead. Okay. This is, he was like safer than Buffy, if that's even possible.
I don't think that's actually possible.
I didn't think he was dead for two reasons. One, because I feel like I've walked in the room with my mom watching Angel before and seeing who I used to call spiky green guy on the screen. And like, there's no way that every time I walked in, it was like these random episodes in season two. Like, that is not probable. And the other reason is because the tone, and I was talking to Karen about this and not explaining myself well, but the tone of the last few episodes of the season is so strange for me that it almost didn't feel like any consequences would stick. It was like a Wizard of Oz fever dream kind of thing.
Yes.
And it didn't feel like any consequences were going to stick. So I was just waiting. As soon as the scene started right back up, you jump right into it. I was like, okay, he's going to talk now. He's going to talk now. He's going to talk now. And then he talked.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's our own resident Jack Skellington.
But green.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that was too big of a surprise that he wasn't actually dead, but nice that he wasn't actually dead anyway, because he's kind of a cool guy. What did you guys think of Wesley in this episode? Because the rebels make him their leader, and we see a bit of a darker side to Wesley, a bit of a colder side, which is quite new for him. And I mean, I think we've seen it a little bit before, but he usually tends to be some comic relief. So what'd you think of that?
I loved it. It's actually part of my favorite quotes, and I'll save most of my conversation for that. But I do like seeing Wesley in charge, and I like seeing him kind of living up to his father's expectations from the other episode where he was like, no, Dad, they're not going to fire me. Like, I think he's actually going to stay the leader. I think he'll take Angel's advice for plans, but he's still, like, he is in this episode still, but I do think that they're going to maintain a good leader role for Wesley now.
Yeah, it was really weird. I liked it, and I definitely had a feeling that the chat with his dad had something to do with it, but the lead up to his being this way seemed a little abrupt for me, or like a little too fast, almost like he just flipped a switch. Because there's one moment where basically he's giving the rebels like all of these ideas or like all of these things, and basically he's going to get sentenced to death anyway, and Gunn is like, shut up, and yeah. He's all jokey there, and then it seems like he just flips like really quickly, with not a lot of things happening around him, just flips. And so I thought that was kind of strange. So I like the beginning Wes, I like the end Wes. I just found it interesting that there was no gray area in between before that.
That's a good point. I like seeing him be decisive. I don't know if it's because I don't really miss when we first met Wes, but I liked the way that he played off of Giles, and that, you know, we thought Giles was the strict one until Wes came into the picture, and then we realized, like, no, Giles is actually super chill in comparison to a lot of these other watchers. And I think sometimes I like the throwback to the way that he can be very decisive and everything, but it's nice to have a little bit of balance of both. So I have not had too much time to talk about Fred up until now, but guys, I really love Fred. And it seems like maybe you guys are kind of into her as well. I know, yeah. I think it was Ariana wrote in here as well, like how great Amy Acker is about being like crazy and dorky. And yet, you know, Fred comes off as adorably endearing. And I just love that whole package, and it's really fun to have her on screen. And it's been really nice seeing her bond with Angel and for them to kind of understand each other. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I found myself very fond of Fred. I think that she's really sweet. It's nice hearing about her making food out of bark. I think that's really in itself endearing, that she's kind of like, I will survive in any situation, and I will make it because I will have tacos. It's a very fabulous way of looking at life.
I mean, what more do you need, Mitch?
Oh my God. True. I thought of you immediately too, as soon as she said that, and I was like, yes, I'm so happy I'm in this episode with Danielle.
I mean, if you look ahead and you look at my favorite line, like, you know, but the sort of funny, and also part that I feel kind of bad about, is that she loves tacos and she loves Mexican food, and she tries making Mexican food out of like tree bark and all of these things. But, and I should like her a lot, but I don't know if I do. There's nothing about her that really clicks with me yet. I found myself waiting for Angel to get back with his friends and have like get away from the scenes with her. I don't know why. I cannot pinpoint it. I would like to like her, but she's not there for me yet. I don't know if it's because like the scattered brain crazy sort of thing just doesn't do it for me. I don't know, but she's so with me. I know that I will have to learn to like her, but I'm just not there yet.
And to be fair, we're getting a slice of her on this planet, And it's very situational, and it's very like, okay, I must survive. So you get a sense of her personality, but you're not seeing her interacting with like everyday things like you will moving forward now that we're back in LA. So I don't fault you at all for being like, I don't know if I do like her, because we haven't seen her be or try to be normal yet. It's always like, okay, I'm either gonna die like within the next 2 seconds, or I'm on the run, and if I get caught, I'm gonna die.
Yeah, she needs some
Yeah, and
normal
she's been
time.
doing that for 5 years.
Exactly.
Her and Angel do get a good amount of scenes here together. Like, in between fights, they're just, like, gazing into each other's eyes lovingly. And I'm like, ugh, I don't have room in my heart for this many ships. Please.
Yeah, Ariana says here, I would guess that she is going to be a new love interest for Angel, except that she is not blonde, so never mind, no.
Yeah. Was Cordelia ever blonde?
How do you guys feel about the possibility of her becoming a love interest for Angel? Are you potentially into it or not really?
It felt like a push, and I am resistant to some pushes, and I think this is one of them. Like, it felt almost too much like they were pushing them together, and then also look at the audience and be like,
Yeah.
You like? You
No.
like?
It's almost because she's so cute that
Yes.
I want to ship them in because he's adorable too. But it's not like I actually see like that much chemistry with them in particular. I think I still see more with him and Cordelia.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think they play off each other very well, but as of right now, there's not too much going on there, so we'll just have to see how it develops.
I think they're sweet.
Yeah, they are. On the flip side of that, Cordelia potentially has a new love interest, or at least a brief one with the Gruselug. What did you guys think of him? Danielle was freaked out by his eyes.
Oh yeah, they were kind of weird. They were
I
contacts,
kept
right?
thinking he was gonna go evil, because like his eyes were evil, so I kept waiting for it.
He's half cow, you know?
But also half demon, so could go evil.
What did you guys think of his personality?
I'll miss Gru. I hope he comes back. It'd be nice to
He
see
was
him and like
cute.
maybe Cordelia can just go take a quick little portal visit now that they seem to be able to do those pretty easily.
Easily.
Oh my God, interdimensional booty call.
You used to
Come here,
call me on my
Shakalog.
portal
Oh my
phone.
God.
Come,
Portal portal,
Chuckalucka
get down.
Lucka. I'm not a fan of the whole I'm in love with him. I've known him for 2 days.
Yeah, and it's I don't like Frozen, but it felt kind of frozen to me, which is also why I thought he was gonna go evil.
He
Like
finishes
his
my
eyes,
sandwiches.
yeah, like his eyes, and then he was like super nice, and I thought he was gonna turn, and I don't know. I didn't like the I'm in love with him, leave him alone. It's like, no, you're in love with Angel. Go
Yeah.
by him.
Go back to Bay.
You're not in love with him. You don't know him. You're a child. No. I
Yeah,
would
I think that's a
listen.
fair point. I like that she cared about him, that they cared about each other fairly immediately, because he does seem like a good guy. But yeah, the whole in
Yeah.
love with him thing was kind of
Don't kill
interesting.
him. He seems nice.
Yeah, exactly. But on the flip side of that, I also think she's being very level-headed, because she doesn't want to. She can't be with him. She can't mate with him, as they say, because she doesn't want her visions to pass on to him, which is what will happen if they do that. And even though they're painful, even though they continue to get worse and she feels all this pressure, it's her way of saving people. And she says that it's an honor. She doesn't want to give that up because she wants to continue doing good for the rest of her world, which is pretty big for Cordelia. I mean, I'm not surprised. I think she definitely has the ability to care like that for humanity in general, but it's considering how painful they are, considering she knows that she has a way now to give up the visions and she doesn't, that's huge.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I really. There's a lot of respect to be had for her in that moment.
And she found her purpose with them. They fill her air pockets, you know.
Exactly. And I'm probably going to question the science here, but I think Ariana did as well. So in order to transfer, you have to like kiss someone, but she kissed, or you have to like have sex with them or whatever. But Doyle transferred to Cordelia probably through a kiss, but Cordelia kissed Rue, so like that didn't transfer.
Yeah, maybe it takes a good cum checking to pass them. I love that word.
Oh boy.
So awful.
Maybe he has to have the intention of passing it on.
Or maybe it's that he's the Gruselug.
Right, it could work differently for them in particular.
Because there's a prophecy or something.
Mm-hmm. And the powers that be could potentially decide how it works in the moment as well. I mean, I know that's not like
a wizard clean... did it.
That's an anything can happen kind of statement there, Karen.
Yeah, it is. But hey, you know, it's a reason. So, okay, so with the whole thing with the Gruselug figured out between Cordelia and Gru, Angel kind of comes in and challenges him, fights for Cordelia, and the head priest kind of manipulates Gru into thinking that Angel wants to ravage her. So they fight, and Angel ends up turning into the beast, which we saw earlier how scary and gruesome that is. But he's able to pull himself back out of it, which, you know, huge deal, bells and whistles, neon sign, and tells Gru, like, no, let's settle this a better way. And then Gru just punches him in the face, which I thought was pretty funny. But in the end, they kind of end up coming onto the same side, and we hear Cordelia say that she loves Gru, and Angel is, like, super excited for, like, 0.2 seconds, and then kind of falls back to Earth.
Yeah, I wish she just said, I love you too, you idiot. That would have been nice. That would have been very fitting there.
Not you, dumbass.
And that kind of ends it there. I mean, like, they defeat the priests. Cordelia has that epic moment of slicing off his head, which I was totally there for. And she decides that, no, she can't stay as the princess as much as she would like to. And so she abolishes slavery. And yes, Gunn explains why Reconstruction is no cakewalk. Oh, that was a glorious moment. And they kind of restore this world just like the prophecy said it would. And she, as much as she doesn't want to leave, she realizes she must. Gru kind of stays there as the leader and to make sure everything goes over smoothly. So are you guys sad to kind of walk away from this world, or are you glad we might be returning to the norm? Danielle, I think I know what your answer is going to be.
I'll wait to hear everybody else's first.
Well, I was convinced we might be staying here for the next season, so I'm glad we're not, because I did not want to be right about that.
I was so surprised.
I did not like this. At all. I did not like this world. I was so relieved when we went back, because it did not do it for me. The only thing I think I really liked out of this world was the dancing cousin in the background of the shots.
Yeah.
Do the dance of shame.
Yeah, I didn't even hear that. I had to ask Karen, like, what did she say? And then once I realized what was going on, then I was laughing. But I did not connect with this. I did not connect with the lawyer stuff. I connected even less with this, and I was so relieved when we went back.
What do you guys think will happen now that they're back, now that Fred's there? Where's Fred gonna go? You think she'll be able to slip back into life, or do you think it'll be
to a taco stand?
maybe yeah. She'll want to work back at the library.
Straight to tacos, work it, or living in that giant ass hotel, maybe ordering Angel to get her some taco room service.
Like, maybe these are the things that I'm thinking. The taco room service. They'll open up the hotel for service and she'll just serve tacos to everyone. Ooh.
Done. I like this. This is going to happen.
I want Taco Bell so bad right now, you don't even know.
I'm hungry. That pizza, that slice of pizza was not enough for me. Another thing we kind of skipped over a little bit was Lorne's progression throughout these two episodes, and especially like saying goodbye to his family. Angel kind of convinces him to admit, you know, his feelings, and then his mother just basically craps all over him, and he's like, yeah, never mind, let's just go. But Lorne says that he and Angel belong in LA because no one belongs there. And I really like that sentiment, and I really like the idea that even though Angel can walk around in the daylight in this world, he also has to deal with this beast inside of him that is a little bit harder to control than in our world. So even though LA is not perfect, it is a place where he knows how to live, and he's comfortable with this dichotomy that he has. And even though nobody fits in there, they all kind of don't fit in together, and it works, and it's just a really nice sentiment.
Yeah, it's very true about Los Angeles.
And then we get to the end, where Willow shows up to tell Angel that Buffy is dead. And I forgot about this, and it was like a punch to the heart. Like, my heart actually hurt as soon as, because they're laughing, and you're like, oh, he's going to be like, there's no place like home, haha. And then the camera pans, and Willow's sitting there, and you suddenly remember what just happened on Buffy, and I don't know, it kind of killed me a little bit inside. Did that happen to anybody else?
Yeah, definitely.
I was waiting for the end of There's No Place Like Home. I've been disappointed when it didn't come. Yeah, it was fine. Again, with the, like, my thing about Buffy, it didn't hit probably as much as it should have, because of just how I perceived the end of Buffy. But I thought it was an interesting moment to choose to have some sort of crossover here. Like, there have been no outreaches or anything like that before. But, like, Willow decided to come see him, like, at this moment. So I'm hoping this signals a little bit more of a connection in the next season. But I thought it was an okay scene. It was a good ending for a season, I will say that.
Could you imagine someone just calling him and telling Angel that, hey, yeah, Buffy died?
Yeah.
Oh, no, definitely not. But I'm sorry. I meant, like, nobody was calling, like, hey, you know, Buffy's sister got taken and she's going to be murdered. Or, like, things are real bad. Like, that's the only part that I meant, like, there was no communication previously. Oh, yeah. But no, definitely there had to be someone who actually went there, and it makes sense that it was Willow, because Xander still hates Angel pretty much.
Yeah, well, Xander
yeah,
Giles isn't too fond of Angel either for the Jane and Calendar torture.
Mm-hmm. And the Giles torture.
Both.
Yeah, let's not forget that one.
Yeah,
all right, let's jump into favorite scenes now. Mine's when the gang meets Fred. It's just, she's so awkward and silly and smart, and everybody's like, I don't really know how to take this person, but hey, she's on our side, so let's go.
She's the cutest.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun to see what she does. We have another pancake.
Mai, what was your favorite scene?
Gunn's reaction to Wesley sending the rebels to their death and then sending Angel to the groove. Duel. Because I think
duel.
Yeah, I think Gunn and Wesley's relationship kind of shifted when he saw how Wesley led the rebels.
Yeah, Gunn was surprised by, yeah, Wesley's ruthlessness.
When you try to save, what does he say?
When you try and save them all, you can't, but when you know that only, or some are going to die, most will live. I mean, that's paraphrased, but that's the idea.
Yeah, like, you can't go into a war trying to save people, because then more people will die.
Mm-hmm. You try not to get anyone killed, you wind up getting everybody killed. Yeah.
Yeah, gotta do what you can with what you have, and war is war, unfortunately.
For the greater good.
Mm-hmm. Danielle, what's your favorite scene?
Cordelia screaming at Lauren's disembodied head.
the just lung, like, capacity on that girl.
There is that. But there's also, I like more the Lauren trying to talk to her. Like, super calm, super calm. And then it was like, oh my god, woman, just shut up.
And Mitch? Yours is related.
Yeah, mine's when Lauren didn't die, because I'm keeping the theme of when Xander didn't die into this. I like that it didn't happen. That was nice. I would miss him.
Favorite lines, the moment when Wes and Gunn are in the, what do they call it? The stocks, basically. And I forget the lead up to this. I'm sorry. It was like they were discussing their deaths and the plan and all of this. And Gunn just goes, "You go to hell and I spend eternity in the arms of baby Jesus." And I don't know why. It just really struck me. I just love Gunn. Like, he's got this dose of reality to him that I think the show really needs and plays into really well.
I want to, like, a fan art of Gunn sitting in the arms of sweet baby Jesus. I think that would be pretty sweet.
Mai, what was your favorite line?
Why do people keep putting me in charge of things? I don't know, Wesley. I don't know.
That is true. Danielle, yours is pretty straight to the point.
I mean, tacos.
I'm still getting Taco Bell after this. That's settled.
Go for it. I feel like that's a great decision.
Yeah.
But yeah, tacos. Tacos, tacos.
And Mitch?
Mine was kind of relating to what we were talking about before with Gunn reacting to Wesley and his harsh leadership in a very good and cold way that I liked. Because after they're telling Angel, "You have to go and be the demon. You'll come back. Don't worry. I believe in you." Gunn goes, "You really think he'll come back?" Wesley says, "I need him to think it." And I was like, oh, I'm really liking this Dumbledore side of Wesley. It's great.
Mitch? Yeah. Remember how you were talking about how you want people to stay dead and, you know, die?
Mm-hmm.
I like how you keep picking scenes that Xander didn't die, Lorne didn't die.
Yeah, that's fine. That's good. That's good. I don't want these people to die. I've had my fill after Joyce. I can't go through that again.
Certain people can stay dead.
Yes. Well, they can stay dead, but I don't want them to die in the first place. But if they have to die, they do need to stay dead.
He doesn't want people to die, because then if they die in his
they
rules,
have to stay
he
dead.
Wants them to stay dead. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, hey, you guys get me.
I understand you, Mitch.
Thanks, that is such weird circular.
So cute.
All right. As usual, if you'd like to get in contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find us on this post on hypeable.com or rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. As usual, we really love iTunes reviews, and especially 5 stars. If you rate us 5 stars, then I will fight against the Gruselug for your honor and freedom.
And she won't turn into a beast.
Nope. Or will I?
So dun, this dun, is going to be like dun. A Zuko battle if you're fighting for honor and freedom.
Yes. Sure. We've got one piece of feedback. This is from Twitter, Laura Morrow, who says, "The end of Through the Looking Glass is the first time I ever wanted to watch ahead of you all, but I am trying to be good." Yes, please be good. Stick with us. If we're torturing the newbies, then we're torturing all of our newbie listeners as well.
Ooh, and aren't we doing something special with Angel for next week?
We are. So that actually flows perfectly into Mitch's musings, which is that next week we are going to be doing Angel 301 and 302 back to back. And then the following week we're doing 601 and 602 for Buffy. That's because this is actually how they aired. So Angel aired ahead of Buffy these 2 weeks. And it's going to be Heartthrob and that vision thing. So Mitch and Danielle, do you have any guesses for what this could be?
What are your deliberations, Danielle?
I mean, Heartthrob. Buffy's heart is coming back to life and she's alive. Like,
but she has to come back from love.
Oh, no.
So she has to have true love's kiss. She's like Snow White right now.
Or oh, no, I hope not.
Sleeping Beauty, you know? She's like, "Kiss me awake, Prince. Prince Spike." And also, we have is Willow going to be there the whole episode, or was that it? Was she just going to be there for that little blip, and then she's like, because I don't know.
Yeah, we're talking about Angel. I was thinking we were talking about Buffy. My bad.
Regardless, no, I mean, they're going to have to resurrect Buffy in this episode, right? I mean, that's why Willow's there. She's there to do that thing.
Yeah, this threw me off. gosh. Oh, and then that Vision thing, I think it'll be 40, and something will happen where she'll have to, like, make a gut-wrenching decision about her visions, because they're obviously starting to take even more of a toll on her, and she might not be able to have them much longer.
That was like a TV guide synopsis. I loved it. Cordy's visions are taking a toll on her, and she'll have to make a heart-wrenching decision about what to do. I like it. Yeah, it's hard to go ahead 2 episodes now, because we're not used to doing that anymore. We used to just, do this, you know, when we were just doing Buffy, but now we're doing doubles again just for this 1 week. It's going to be tough to try and predict. I don't know. We have to see Heartthrob to know what's going on in that Vision thing. But is anyone else going to follow Willow? Or is it just going to be her over an Angel?
Does anybody care enough to follow Willow?
Well, I mean, Tara, what if she came along?
I kind of hope not.
Yeah.
Because I feel like she would just be... This is terrible. I feel like she would just be kind of there on Angel taking up space. Because, like, they haven't really been introduced. They don't have a rapport. They don't have any sort of relationship. So, like, what's she going to do? Just be there and be Willow's, like, hugging pillow? I don't know.
Well, she can help her resurrect Buffy, because I assume they're going to Wesley to learn how to do that, maybe. Or maybe they know about Cordelia's visions by now, and they're going to ask her... Like, you know, teach us how Buffy will come back, use the vision to do it. And she'll be like, I can't just force it upon it. So, I don't know. I feel like they're going to have Buffy back probably by 6:02. Probably not 6:01. 6:01 will still be the process of getting into that. So, 3:01 or 3:02 for Angel will be the setup, a very big setup toward getting Buffy back. But do you think Willow's going to be there for 3:01 and 3:02, or is she just going to be there for 3:01?
Probably just 3:01.
Yeah.
Because 3:02 looks like it's really
Cordelia based.
Going to go back to Angel. And they really don't do character crossovers for all that long on these shows. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't seem like they care enough to do so.
That is true. And yeah, regardless, I'm excited. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's really cool that they did 2-parters for the season openers. That's always exciting. And I guess we're going to catch you guys back when Buffy's alive.
Or will we?
Oh, dun, dun, dun.
You're not lying. But thank you, everybody, for tuning in once again. And until next time, I'm Karen.
I'm Mai.
I'm Danielle.
And I'm Mitch.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye.
It was your line, Danielle, to hum a cute song.